Chapter 58. Joshua felt heavy, pushed back in his couch.
Ow, it feels like a troll just jumped on my chest.
Ooh.
Not you, Sancho. You okay down there, buddy?
And the light from outside the window had changed, he saw, to a kind of silvery blue.
Everybody stay still, Maggie said. Just lie back in your couches. I don't want any broken bones or heart attacks just from the effort of standing up. Let's take stock. We're on some kind of solid surface. We're not accelerating. We're certainly not falling. We're not in space. But the gravity here, wherever here is higher than at home. Stop me if I get any of this wrong, Lobsang.
Precisely right so far, Admiral.
Call me Captain. Aboard my ship, I'm Captain.
How much heavier?
About 20%. We're on some kind of super-Earth, maybe. Everybody call in. Lobsang, Joshua?
Both fine, Captain.
Dev?
Everything checks out, Dev said.
How are you, you lummox?
Fine, Captain.
Lee?
Copacetic.
Oh, good grief. Indra?
I see stars.
At that, Joshua couldn't resist it. He loosened his harness and leaned forward to his small window. He saw a desolate, cratered plain, littered with sharp-edged rocks, moonlight perhaps. But there was air here, evidently. The sky was a deep purple blue. Perhaps there was a sun hidden behind the horizon to his right. He saw a glow spreading there, a hint of pinkness. But the sky was dominated by stars, and stars impossibly big and bright compared to the stars of Earth. He counted 5, 6 very bright stars showing disks, maybe a dozen lesser lights, and a more distant panorama of crowded constellations. Dev asked,
"Can we go out to sea?"
"I'd advise against it," Lobsang said. "Aside from the higher gravity, the atmosphere is mostly nitrogen and carbon dioxide, only a trace of oxygen, rather like a dead Earth. Even in pressure suits, the higher gravity makes it perilous. Clearly, we were right to prepare the pod, to bring protection."
"There doesn't seem to be much out there to see anyhow," Maggie said.
Joshua wasn't sure that was true. He thought he saw something on the horizon, more complex than the rocky waves of the crater rims. Some kind of structure? His old eyes were too poor to show him more.
Indra asked, "So where are we?"
Lobsang said,
"The obvious question. Clearly not in the solar system."
And that simple fact had somehow not congealed in Joshua's mind.
"Wow, of course not. We just crossed interstellar space. In a step."
"I know where we are," Dev said.
Lobsang said, "I'll soon figure out if those stars up there are visible from Earth, and if so, I'll be able to tell where we are. You saw that this ship is crusted with telescopes, spectroscopes, as well as atmospheric sensors. We can detect temperature, radiation. We have probes for sampling the local rock suite, grabbers to take specimens of any life forms."
"I don't see any flowers to pick, Lobsang."
"And the onboard AI is very smart."
"You know that, do you?"
"Well, yes, as I am the onboard AI."
Dev snapped,
"Will you listen? Sorry, will you listen, sirs? I know where we are. I'm an astronomy buff. I spent a lot of time in the gap at the brick moon looking out at the stars."
"Where then?" Maggie asked.
"The Pleiades."
Lobsang waited a few seconds as his automated sensor suite delivered its results.
"Lucky guess."
"Was not."
"We are on a planet orbiting one of the principal stars of that cluster. Some of that wispiness up there is probably above the atmosphere."
"I know it is," Dev said. "There's a cloud of interstellar dust crossing the cluster, easily visible in the telescope."
"Well, I'm impressed," Joshua said.
"Well done, Mr. Sulu," Lobsang said dryly. "But in that case, we've only come around 400 light-years from home so far."
Joshua thought that over. Only 400 light-years.
"When we get a little further out, it may be more of a challenge to locate our position.
Maggie held up her hands. Enough of the antler locking. Let's review what happened here. So, we stepped? But instead of passing up or down the chain of the long earth, we stepped in another direction, so to speak, Joshua said. And ended up here, on the planet of another star. That is what was expected, Indra said. From the fragmentary clues extracted from the lollipops, partial communications with the thinker, the long earth is a chain of worlds, like a necklace, drifting in some higher dimensional space. It may fold back on itself, or it may cut across other necklaces, other long worlds, drifting in the higher continuum. Like this one, Maggie said. Yes, we think that the thinker is an engine for imagining these more remote worlds, these tremendous jumps. And when that couples with my own will, my ability to decohere... Oops, you lost me, Maggie said. Stepping is a faculty of the mind, Lobsang said. And the thinker we just built is the most powerful mind our small planet is ever likely to see. Hence this monumental stepping.
Joshua said, So is this how the silver beetles stepped into their own long world?
Yes, Lobsang said. But that was an accident. This time, we're in control.
Joshua said, Or the thinker is.
Maggie said, So what now? You say the theory is we step through a linkage between one long world, the Earth, and another. I thought long worlds are supposed to be linked to the rise of sapient life. I don't see any signs of sapience here. I don't see life at all.
Joshua was still peering at those structures on the horizon. About that. If it's long, Dev said, then we ought to be able to step across it. East or west, I mean.
Yes, Lobsang said, just as Sally Lindsay and her father stepped across the long Mars. Allow me.
God damn it. Joshua swallowed his pride and fumbled for his prescription sunglasses so he could see those distant structures better. But before he got them over his nose, there was another discontinuity. The light changed again, and those distant structures vanished. But the heavy weight on Joshua's chest remained. Maggie turned on Lobsang.
What the hell did you just do?
I stepped, Lobsang said reasonably. The conventional way. West, as it happens. Thereby carrying Uncle Arthur with me as a temporary extension of my body.
Next time you feel like pulling a stunt like that, consult me first.
Again, Joshua cautiously sat up and peered out of the window. There were the Pleiades once more, a crowded cluster of stars in the sky, but now their glow was obscured by a pale blue sky, a scatter of streaky clouds. And looking down, he saw that the ground was quite different. There were none of those lunar-type craters. Now he saw rolling hills, a lake of what looked like blue water in the middle distance. And life. Something like grass. Something like trees with trunks, a crown of branches with leaves.
It could almost be Earth, he said, if it wasn't for the predominant color scheme of purple.
The pod rang like a gong. Maggie yelled, What the hell was that?
My bad, called Lobsang. I just launched a sounding rocket.
I didn't know we had any sounding rockets. Joshua laughed, though his own heart was thumping. Oh, Lobsang loves his sounding rockets.
I thought we needed a wider view. The results of my sensors are coming in. There's now an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere out there. Not quite breathable. The oxygen's too high, and so's the carbon dioxide. But it's close. And unstable. I mean chemically. I deduce the presence of life on this world.
Joshua said dryly, So you just deduce the existence of all the trees and grass and flowers we can see out there?
Precisely, Lobsang said without a trace of irony. My aerial survey is coming in. I can see a good few hundred miles around our position. No sign of sapient life, at least nothing technological.
How can you tell so quickly? Dev called down.
No regular structures. I have pattern-seeking algorithms to tell me that. Also,
No sign of forest clearances, no fires, no industrial gas imbalances in the air. I'd detect Neanderthals skulking around their hearths in the forest clumps, believe me. Of course, we'd have to do a global survey to be sure. In fact, I've yet to see any evidence of large animal life. Slam. Again, the pod rocked. This time Joshua's port went dark, and he flinched back. Maggie growled, "Now what? Lapsang, another rocket?"
"He's innocent this time," Joshua said, and he pointed to his window. Maggie leaned over to see. Together they peered into a kind of moist, clammy tunnel, with purple-black walls, feebly illuminated by the cabin lights.
"That's somebody's throat," Maggie said, wondering.
Joshua said, "I think we found evidence of animal life, Lapsang."
Dev stood up cautiously and peered down through his own window from above.
"Oh, wow. I can see it from up here. Think of a turtle. A huge one. With an armored shell. I mean, those are serious blades. And legs like a tyrannosaur. And jaws like a crocodile. I don't think he can crush the hole."
"Step us back out of here, Lapsang," Maggie called.
"Wait," Joshua said. "We don't want to kill that thing. We will if we carry him with us."
"Leave it to me," Lapsang said. He pushed a button. This time there was a sharp knock, as if somebody had punched the outer hull. Joshua heard a kind of bellow and the beast dropped away. He turned to Lapsang.
"What was that? A weapon?"
Lapsang said, "I use one of our impact probes. Non-lethal, but it will have stung. A small shell designed to bury itself in rock, to return a mineralogical analysis."
Maggie said, "Enough, I don't care. Lapsang, step us back."
A subtle shift once more, and they were back on the moon-like plain, under the brilliant star cluster.
"I don't get it," Dev said. "There should be sapience here. That's why this world is long in the first place, right? Yet we saw nothing."
"No," Joshua said. "There is something, on this copy of the world at least. Take a look at the horizon at around 10 o'clock. There's a building out there, I think. I saw it before."
Maggie produced a set of big navy binoculars.
"Some kind of structure. Looks like a bunker. Roofless, abandoned."
She lowered the glasses. "There was sapience here then."
"But not anymore," Joshua said.
"And those craters, they weren't in the stepwise world."
"So they weren't created by impacts like on Earth's moon. I guess the folks who lived here, whoever they were, whatever they were, they blew themselves up."
"A race even more stupid than humanity then," Lapsang said. "I'll write that in the log. A notable discovery." "There may be survivors elsewhere," Indra Newton said. "We know that if a long world has a purpose, it must be to serve as a refuge for sapient life, even against its own follies."
Maggie said, "It could take a lifetime to find them. That's for a future expedition, not for us. Let's go on."
"But which way?" asked Indra Newton. "South? I could take us home."
"North,"
said a small voice from somewhere under Joshua's seat.
"Let's keep going."
The crew exchanged stares. Then Joshua turned in his seat to look down through the mesh floor. His head briefly swam in the higher gravity.
"Sancho?
Who?
Who the hell's down there with you?"
"Nobody."
Maggie said sternly, "Come on out of there, nobody." There was a rustle in the heaps of straw that surrounded the big troll, and a couple of supply boxes tumbled out of the way. Then a small human being stood, face tilted up bravely. It was Jan Roderick. Joshua laughed.
"Well, that's reduced the average age of the crew."
"You,"
Maggie said. "The kid from Madison, Wisconsin, who made all those bolts."
Dev called down. "Hey, little dude, sit down, okay? Sit on a bale or sit on that troll. We don't want you breaking any bones in this gravity."
Jan obeyed. Maggie snapped, "How did you get aboard?"
Jan pointed at Joshua.
I said I was with him.
Maggie rubbed her face. Oh, for cripe's sake. Joshua had to laugh.
Don't blame me.
Lobsang said, I suppose that once he was aboard, he was unlikely to be detected. We aren't mass critical. We have no significant internal sensors, not of the kind that would detect intruders. This was not anticipated.
It damn well should have been, Maggie said. Suppose he'd been a suicide bomber. When we get back, there'll be heads rolling in my security team. Why the hell did you do this, kid?
Indra Newton said,
Is it not obvious? He is here for the same reason we all are. Curiosity. They never would have let me go, Jan said, gazing up. No matter how many boats I made, I was just a kid.
So you stowed away, Dev said. I don't know if I would have had the guts.
Maggie said, Can it, Belaniuk? Don't encourage him. What if we'd had to go back because of you, stowaway? How would that make you feel? If you caused us to terminate the mission?
Joshua touched her arm. Hey, go easy.
Okay, okay. Lobsang, I take it our life support can sustain the additional burden of a 10-year-old brat.
I'm 11.
I stand corrected. An 11-year-old brat.
Lobsang said, As long as we don't extend the mission unduly, there's plenty of reserve. It's the lack of an acceleration couch that concerns me more.
Ah. All our couches were molded to fit our bodies.
Yeah, I'm not likely to forget the fitting session, Joshua said wryly.
We have no spare couch. Even if we did, it would not fit the boy. I'm fine in the straw, said Jan.
Like hell, said Maggie.
Come on, said Joshua. The straw is good enough for old Sancho. And 10-year-old kids are made of rubber anyhow.
11.
Sorry. Listen, kid, just cuddle up to Sancho. Can you do that?
Sure.
Sancho, you make sure he's okay down there, and keep him out of trouble. You got that?
Sancho waved a troll call.
Who?
Okay, let's go on. But when we get back, kid, and I deliver you back to the home, you're going to apologize to Sister Colleen, and you'll tell Sister John what you've done, and they're going to ground you for a year.
I can live with that.
What's that?
I mean, sorry, Mr. Valiente.
Maggie glared at Joshua.
Are we done?
Joshua shrugged.
What a circus.
Okay, people, buckle up. Mr. Belaniuk, Ms. Malone, if you please.
Lee said,
Okay, Indra. Same routine as before.
North again.